Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to the Randomly Generated History Club, where three non-historians pick a year at random and try to learn things about it. I'm Ant, and I'm here with my two friends, Will and Anna.
Hi.
Hi.
Unnecessary pauses, but we'll take it. So this week, we're talking about the year 261.
Oof.
Yep. And we're doing things a little bit differently this time. Simply because not a lot has happened and it's all centered around the same sort of series of events. And so we're effectively looking at the same set of events and the sort of same dynastic struggles through different lenses with different hot takes on them.
And the one question I get a lot is, do we coordinate our bits ahead of time? And usually we really don't.
No.
We'll mention a sort of one word, one line thing about what each of us is covering so we don't overlap.
Yeah.
But today there needed to be a little more stitching than normal.
And I absolutely refuse any kind of coordination at all. Much to the annoyance of you two.
Yeah.
I actually didn't know that we were coordinating until today.
Yeah.
So I completely passed over. I didn't read the text messages that you said what you're covering, and I just plowed on. So I'm going to reinforce some things that are being said today.
Yeah.
And to be clear, many podcasts would choose to do things in the way we're doing them in this episode, because it probably will work quite well, as in examining different aspects of the same thing. But so I don't think this is a negative thing. This is just an interesting thing that's happening that we might do for earlier years, I guess.
And you know whose fault it is? 261.
Right.
No,
it's so boring.
I think it's the random number generator's fault.
Shut up.
My God.
I mean, sorry, it is faultless, blameless, glory be, hail to the almighty RNG.
Okay, good. The red laser dot on your forehead has disappeared.
Will, do you want to start us off with three words?
Yes, I do. My three words are persecutor, taken captive.
Ooh.
Oh, okay. So it sounded like there was something else after that, but there can't be because that was three words.
Yeah, exactly.
My three words are empress, icon, assassin.
And my three words are more than one empire.
Also more than three words. Wow.
I'm so bad at this.
That's two strikes. Okay.
Yeah, I'm definitely on two strikes. More empire now.
Much better.
Oh God. I'm so sorry.
I think that's your first strike.
I think it is. I think we're on a strike each now.
Yeah, we're on a strike each. When we get three strikes, have we established yet what happens? Because of course there's the traditional defenestration that we typically would undertake.
But none of us really have the time to go to Prague right now.
We can't go to Prague. We don't know where the window is, so that's not an option. Do we have a backup?
Oh, I have windows.
Okay.
Yeah, I do. Windows.
Okay, great.
Cool. All right. Will, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, no worries. We'll just breeze straight past this lethal decision we've just made.
Being your friend, Will, means breezing past a lot of your lethal decisions.
No one's forcing you to be here.
He has a gun to my head.
Okay, so this week I'm going to talk about the Roman Emperor Valerian, who was a controversial fellow.
Mm.
And I'm going to talk about what happened to him eventually in the Battle of Edessa and after the Battle of Edessa. And Valerian ruled Rome for about 7 years, from 253 to 260. And unlike a lot of Roman emperors at the time, Valerian was from a noble family, and that family had a bit of a tradition for serving as senators. So it's a bit like being a Bush, I guess, or a Kennedy in the US in the current decade.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a couple of decades old as
Wait,
an example.
Sorry, you said unlike most emperors?
Yeah, interestingly. So this was a historical period for the Romans when a whole series of their emperors came from backgrounds which had nothing really to do with the ruling classes, because they were just, they were very frequently rebel leaders and people who had led uprisings against
cool.
and those are the people who ended up being emperors. So for him, he came from what, 300 years or 400 years before would have been a fairly traditional background for somebody who ended up as consul or leader of Rome, which is to say the aristocracy, basically,
that
the ruling
makes sense.
Class.
Okay.
And he'd spent time before he was emperor as consul, which is a very senior position in the Roman state. And before his rise to power, he was working for and working very, very closely with his predecessor. And that previous emperor had failed then to put down a revolt against him by the military. And Valerian, who was at this time, by this time already in charge of Roman army himself, arrived to try to support his predecessor, who he was very closely allied to, but really arrived too late. The military overthrew the emperor, and which is really, really bad. But on the plus side, Valerian himself found himself being proclaimed by the military as the new emperor.
So the military had a problem with the old guy, but didn't have a problem with the old guy's best friend.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Okay.
Yeah. And clearly there's a whole load more politics to that, but we're not going to talk about that.
Did he also win because he invented some sort of very strong type of steel?
Careful. Careful.
Okay, just moving on. Just seeing if I could get you to say the words.
Last week we went the entire episode without even getting close to the words.
To the words that should not be named.
Yeah.
This is dangerous territory here. Okay, so moving on away from popular television programs about power. Seats of power. So all of that's very, very lovely. And by the way, in my time in the army, I was internally hoping to be proclaimed emperor most of the time. and generally that didn't happen.
Yeah.
And so his reign was pretty remarkable, not least for his extreme persecution of Roman Christians. But it's probably best known for what happened at Edessa. So Edessa is in modern-day Urfa, or Şanlıurfa in modern-day Turkey. I hope I've got the pronunciation right. I think that's about right, Şanlıurfa. And this place is quite close to the Syrian border, so it's sort of in south-southeast Turkey, east of Gaziantep. And but at the time, it was in Roman Syria, the Roman province of Syria. And Valerian had to spend a lot of time in this area dealing with attacks by the Sassanids to the east and the Persians. And so he had, and indeed only a couple of years before, in 257, he had to go there to retake Antioch, which was a prized Roman possession at the time. And in 259, he then moved on to Edessa. But when he arrived there, there was a big outbreak of plague, which was kind of disastrous because it killed a bunch of legionaries, as plague can do. And
from time to time.
From time to time. And that weakened the Roman position. And then the enemy, the Persians, then saw that there was an opportunity and then besieged the town to take advantage of the time of weakness. And then in 260, probably in June or the summer of that year, Valerian was then decisively defeated at the Battle of Edessa, which you will thank me mm-hmm. for this. I am not going to go into the details of.
Wow, you've grown you so have. Much.
You're more interested in politics than warfare. This is bizarre.
Yeah.
And he was really unusually for a Roman emperor and as a sign of, in my opinion, terrible incompetence, allowed himself to be taken prisoner at this battle and then remained a prisoner for the rest of his life. And his capture was obviously a tremendous embarrassment and defeat for the Romans. And in terms of pure military analysis, it can be described, I think, as a complete shit show. And they basically lost their entire army. Valerian was taken prisoner. First ever Roman prisoner to be taken. First ever emperor to be taken as a prisoner. Incredibly embarrassing. And prior to his death, he was then subjected to appalling, outrageously appalling humiliations by his captors, which pretty grim.
Sorry, who captured him?
Persians.
Okay. That's what I thought, but then I just blacked out for
It'd
a minute.
It'd be even more embarrassing if he's captured by someone he wasn't fighting.
Yeah, that would be the most embarrassing.
Yeah, it wasn't self-captured. He was captured by Chapeur, the guy, his captor.
Yes.
So this is where our research overlaps, because he was subjected to being a footstool.
Oh.
He was kept in a cage. He was trotted out, etc.
Wow. Yeah, and then after being treated in that way, which is pretty embarrassing for an emperor.
Yeah.
He was then made to swallow molten gold, which is pretty awful. And then Chapeur had him skinned.
Holy moly.
And it's one of these things that's awful, but it's long ago now, enough now that you can kind of slightly laugh at just how appalling the whole thing is.
Yeah.
But he then had his skin stuffed with straw and preserved as a trophy in one of the main Persian temples.
Oh my God.
Yeah, but
it's brutal.
There's an interesting fact about this. Some scholars think that this might be Christian propaganda. So after the fact, Christian scholars said, oh, look at the savagery of, you know, the East, you know, look what they have done, you know, you can't trust them, never surrender to them, etc. So potentially it's all actually made up. And so there's sort of back and forths about the record of is this actually true? You know, some records from the time say that he lived out his days happily and, like, you know, in prison.
He chose to be a footstool.
He was imprisoned, but, you know, he wasn't humiliated and tortured, etc.
Well, they're suggesting that he lived out his days happily as a footstool, like in Beauty and the Beast. he was transformed into a singing footstool.
You know, I'm just saying there's lots of conflicting historical records. He may have been magically transformed. We'll never know.
I'm just saying it's weird that he was transformed into a footstool by the Persians and not the Ottomans.
Ooh. And he wasn't transformed into a rug instead.
Ah!
I'm so sorry, yeah, everyone.
Don't be sorry. That's funny stuff.
That's great. We got the seal of approval. Oh, wow.
It's great stuff. So, I don't want to be, to finish off here, I don't want to be controversial about the guy, but I think it's, in my opinion, it ended pretty badly for him.
I think so, too.
Ooh, I mean, hot take. Are you going to back that up?
Need some citation.
Well, it depends. It depends on which school of history you subscribe to here. So if you're on the Disney side and you very much think he's been put under a spell, but then actually quite kind of taken to the idea of being a footstool, then, of course, like, actually, that was maybe his calling.
Well, for my part, again, this overlaps, but I want to focus a little bit on the Persian side and a little bit of the aftermath of this battle. So at this time, Rome was obviously at war with the Persian Empire.
Mm-hmm. Whoa.
Which we've covered, I know. But I want you to know that the Persian Empire is pretty much a catch-all for a huge period of time in the sort of Iranian, Mesopotamian sort of area of the world. And that there was you know, it's this conflation, it's a very Western view of history, like this Persian Empire, this continuous thing. Mm. So it spanned, you know, from 550 BC or even before that, so the Achaemenian Empire, then the Hellenistic, then the Parthian and the Sassanian Sasanian, which is what we're talking about now, and then on to the Arabs and the Iranians, Seljuks, Mongols, Timurids, Ottomans, Safavids. Afghans, Nadarshad, Zand, Qajar, Pahlavi. So just saying that, like, the Persian Empire is a little bit of a myth in a way, that there are several empires that, you know, largely did encapsulate the same sort of areas of land back and forth, you know, massive changes and peaks and troughs. But the Sasanian Empire is a period of time which is about 400 years. And they stretch from the Indus Valley in the east, the Balkans and ancient Egypt, huge swaths of land. And the reason why they were so successful in this specific period was not just because they had an impressive, massive and professional army, as opposed to conscripts and just sort of people gathered in times of emergency to fight. Mm. These were full-time professional soldiers with massive areas of campaigning, continuously campaigning. They also employed often quite exotic techniques for a lot of the people they encountered. So lots of war at range. So they had lots of archers and not just spearmen, pikemen, and getting up close. But they're quite mobile. And they had various permutations of ranged weapons, like ultra long range weapons for the time, like catapults, etc.
I love that that is described as exotic means of fighting. Well, I thought you meant like they sent a bunch of belly dancers out, a lot of veils and shawls.
There was a lot of veils, shawls, yeah, and interesting music. They also had a large navy, which they employed to go up and down the Mediterranean. And importantly, they were actually able to hold on to power because what they provided for the civilians in the area, which gathered loyalty over the decades, was a centralized administration. They focused on infrastructure, roads, and a postal system.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
That's how you keep the civilians happy, with the post.
Honestly, it is, because that opens up trade, opens up communication, so you can dialogue with people across the empire readily, and you can actually have good trade relationships. So, much like the EU, let's say, you know, the basis behind this is more trade, more open relationships, etc., is going to have stable society, and that's been working great for UK and the EU.
Yep. No problems. 10
no
out
problems
of 10.
At all.
No
10
notes.
Out of 10.
Careful.
Nothing controversial gone on there.
Careful.
At all. Oh, yeah. Sorry. They don't teach you about this in Game of Thrones. Oh, no. Ah! Oh, no. I said it. So the Persians, they peaked and troughed over this time and were sort of in the sort of waning period and a bit expansionary as well at the same time. So stretching themselves thin.
Okay.
And they were in control of Iran, and they were ruled by this emperor Shapur, which we discussed. And the series of conflicts with the Romans have been going on for years and years and years, tens if not hundreds of years, and will continue. And largely, it's a kind of a stalemate. The borders remained effectively the same. There's back and forth, and it's just a very wasteful, expensive mess. In fact, the reason the Sasanians came into power is because their predecessors, the Parthians, actually effectively bankrupted themselves and lost control because of the constant warring with the Romans, and the Sasanians, you know, learned nothing from this and continued doing this. So as we discussed, the Battle of Edessa occurred, the humiliation of Valerian, you know, the history books are a little bit shaky about this, hence why the sort of back and forth of did this happen to Valerian or not. But they reckon that it could have been through betrayal that he was caught. So like he said, oh yes, I'm going to negotiate the truce and then you can go home. And then they said, nah, jokes, take him.
Classic.
Wow.
And it is regarded as the worst military disaster of all time, which is pretty high stakes.
Wow, wait, hang on.
Of all time. It is regarded as the worst military disaster of all time.
By who?
By anyone who has an emperor that hasn't been caught.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I guess catching the emperor is
never happened.
Suboptimal.
Unless, I guess, Napoleon, I guess, was caught after the fact. Not during a battle, right?
Yeah, but that did have some political consequences for
France. It didn't. Not at all. He was fine. He just got a holiday to Ibiza or wherever he went. Some island somewhere. Anyway, after this, Shapur was, you know, invigorated and has
none of us covered him last week in the end, did we?
Who?
Napoleon.
No.
So we don't know what happened.
We actually don't know. We'll have
to go
back to it.
Yeah. Well, as we've discussed before, history doesn't actually happen until
we
get it in the year.
Yeah.
With the RNG.
So Shapur had his sights on Sicilia now, which is a beautiful, historically significant town in the southern Anatolian area of modern day Turkey. Mediterranean. It had, you know, luscious flatlands and mountains.
Great
lots
spas,
of
great beaches,
but great port town and very defensible positions in the mountains. So you could capture the port, but it could be recaptured again. And it's actually where pirates previously in like the year 100 to 50 BCE, pirates used to ensconce themselves there and eventually drummed out by the Romans. But he had his sights on this because it was a bit of a jewel of trade and center point. And it's actually the place where people think that Christianity began. Actually, they think that Christianity began there as a sort of a structured form of religion. It's very hazy.
Oh, okay. You mean as it, when like the religion of it started?
The religion of Christianity.
Not like not, it's an alternate, the manger was in Turkey.
Yeah, the manger, yeah. It was not that.
Gotcha.
But he went and attacked it, and you know, with his navy and his exotic dancers. And what occurred was called the ravaging of Shapur.
Ooh.
Sicilia by Shapur. On his way back from there, withdrawing tactically in order to regroup and take his spoils and stuff. This was then a counterattack was launched by a chap called Callistus, who had a nickname of the Ballista.
Ooh.
Which is pretty cool.
Why?
Well, you can guess why he might be called the Ballista.
Well, hang on, because, I mean, obviously ballistics, weapons, whatever.
Yeah.
Did that come from him?
Oh, that would be a great fact if that was known, but it's not. So we don't know. We don't know why it's called ballista.
But the ballista was like a, then a type of weapon, wasn't
it? Yes, yeah, exactly. So potentially he had some patent, you know.
He was one of those famous Roman emperor or general slash inventors.
Yeah, so Callistus came with two others, Odenathus, am I saying that right?
Yeah.
And Maracanus. So the three of them in various pincer maneuvers, navy, land, maybe not air at this stage, were able to actually take down the overextended Persians and just kind of just gobble them up, really, you know, as open square formations or, you know, fill in the blanks here, Will. It was great, great war stuff. I'm not going to go into it.
Please don't fill in the blanks, Will.
Yeah. Not to go too further spoilers forward, because I think, Annie, you've got more on this.
I do.
But the defeat and subsequent shenanigans of succession leads to revolts and a temporary fragmentation of the Roman emperor.
Indeed.
Empire.
We do that every time.
Every time.
I know. I don't know what it is.
I confuse emperor and empire.
The two of us specifically keep...
Oh,
yeah.
My God. Can we just say emp for short?
Yeah, and you can fill in the rest.
Roman emp.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's either the person in charge or the whole thing.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you, Ant. I'm going to just pick up straight from there with one quick thing that...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
That neither of you mentioned, which is that this period of Roman history is called the crisis of the third century, which ironically also describes how I felt doing the research for today.
It's so dense. There's so much going on.
It is. There's so much.
It's all interconnected.
It's all interconnected. It's like this is the epicenter. I mean, certainly things were happening elsewhere in the world. It's just poorly preserved.
Yes.
And got to talk about the Romans in 261. Yeah. So yes, as Ant mentioned, Odenathus is this guy who had teamed up to fight Shapur. He is an Aramaean nobleman in Palmyra. Palmyra is in present-day Syria. But his family had been granted Roman citizenship a few generations back, and he has attained this pretty elevated status in the city. And he plays this incredible game where he simultaneously takes advantage of the weakness in the eastern provinces by, you know, teaming up to attack the Persians, but also remaining loyal to Rome, but also proclaiming himself king of Palmyra, attacking the Persians, backing the legitimate Roman emperor against a possible usurper, quelling a rebellion in Syria. Like, he's doing all of the right things. So everybody likes him.
Yeah, he's playing the game.
Yeah, he's playing a blinder.
He's playing a certain game. Very well.
He's playing a game of wars. And so I think because of this popularity, the emperor basically just has to go along with it and say, like, all right, yeah, sure, you're king of Palmyra now, that's fine. And all of this is happening in 260 and 261. So I appease the RNG, which is good because the story really heats up after that.
Here we go.
Odenathus. So he capitalizes on all of this momentum by really pressing the advantage in the eastern provinces of Rome. He takes the fight again to the Persians. He gains some territory. He proclaims himself King of Kings or Shahanshah, which is a very typical Iranian specifically epithet that has special meaning there. So by him taking the title, he's essentially claiming way more legitimacy with the Persians than he actually had. But it's sort of a power move.
But he was such a popular, like, cool dude.
Yeah, everyone's like, yeah, that guy's great. So at some point he's in control of the Levant, parts of Mesopotamia, parts of Turkey. He crowns his son as co-king, and the Roman emperor is still just like going along with it, even though at this point Odenathus is really becoming independent of Rome. Then in 267, Odenathus and his son assassinated.
Oh.
Boff.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Didn't see that coming. Who never happens in history.
Who did it? Who do you think?
Typically with Roman emperors, I believe it's the Praetorian Guard.
Okay.
I'm going to say that it was probably someone from the Persian Empire.
Okay. So we've got the Romans or the Persians.
Yeah.
The answer is... no one knows.
Oh, brilliant. I love these.
Yeah. See, none of the above. So the most popular theories are, one, he was killed by an assassin of unknown allegiance, but whose name was also Odenathus, which that seems to me like somebody just wrote the history wrong.
Yeah,
and then it
seems
spiraled.
Like a typo.
They confused the noun and the verb or the subject
exactly.
of the sentence.
Yeah, that was killed or killed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Theory number two, he was killed by conspirators, possibly a nephew, at a friend's birthday party, which is just the worst.
That's bad. Yeah. I hate when that happens at the birthdays I go to.
I know. I don't go to parties anymore.
Also, the top two theories are, one, he was assassinated by an assassin of unknown allegiance, and two, it was done via conspiracy.
Yeah.
I mean, those are very safe bets to be made.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of... There's so much that's unknown about everything I'm about to say. So the third theory is that he was killed by his cousin, a man named Maeonius. And the fourth theory is that Maeonius conspired with Odenathus's
and
Ketchupius.
Oh, come on. No one knows, do they? This is ridiculous. I mean, there's so many theories.
I did tell you that no one knows.
Right.
That's literally how I started bit. So... possibly conspired with Odenathus's wife, Zenobia, allegedly because the son who was co-king with Odenathus was his son from his first marriage to a woman who is unnamed in history. Classic.
There is a fifth theory, isn't there, about the seagulls that potentially conspired together to peck him to death? Isn't there? I believe the seagull conspiracy is quite a well-formed conspiracy.
Well, I mean, you know, it's his fault for having chips in his pocket.
He had chips in his pocket.
That's why Maeonius was there, because he wanted to get the chips. And
he's asking for the chips.
Yeah, it's a great condiment wars.
And in a mess of swooping and beaks.
Well, this is where the aerial combat came into. This is the pincer maneuver from Lansi and
Seagulls. Exactly. That was the third force that we were, the third domain.
Any more spurious facts for us,
there's
Anna?
There's a sixth one.
No more.
Veto.
I actually have so much more to talk about. This is but a footnote. So the important person to think about in this situation is Zenobia. And so very cool name. Definitely his queen, definitely had children of her own. theorized to be the assassin or to have conspired with the assassin. It turns out that's probably not true, especially because the theory most people put forward as to why she would do that is that she was mad that Odenathus was remaining so pro-Roman mm-hmm. and she wanted to do her own thing. And at least for the first few years of what becomes her reign, she sticks to this very pro-Roman thing. So it's sort of like, what were her motivations? But what we know for sure did happen is that she essentially inherited the throne. And technically, her son takes it, but he's a child. He's 10 or 11 or something. So she's ruling as regent and is the de facto power. The Palmyrene kingdom at this point is pretty large, and she is ruling over it. Zenobia is pretty awesome. If you've got your randomly generated History Club bingo cards at home, get them out, because I'm about to be really excited about scholarship. Zenobia loves scholars. She cultivates this court of intellectuals. She protects religious minorities. She doesn't try to shoehorn all the Palmyrene subjects into one particular religion, which is important because in the amount of territory they're covering, there's just loads of different religions and beliefs. She loves intellectual curiosity. Mm-hmm. So I, in turn, love her.
I'm guessing she lasts like 3 weeks.
slightly longer than that, but not much. The other thing about Zenobia is that she was super ambitious. She didn't just sort of meekly rule until her son came of age. She really took charge. She kind of kept things ticking over in the kingdom for the first few years, but then she really starts pushing the boundaries. She's quite expansionist. She starts by fortifying a bunch of settlements along the Euphrates that safeguard the borders with Persia. And then when the Roman emperor is distracted up in the Balkans in 270, she sacks the city of Bostra, possibly Petra as well. Soon she's got her sights set on Egypt, partly because of the trade routes. Possibly, this is another thing that historians don't agree about, but it's possible that she was descended from Cleopatra. I think it probably she wasn't, but it was a way for later historians to sort of explain why she would have been so interested in Egypt. And she conquers Egypt pretty easily. And all along, she's like inching towards proclaiming herself some sort of empress. She's dropping little hints. She's starting to use titles that the Roman emperor would use.
What hints would they be? It's like, oh, I've got a friend that could be empress. You know, I'm just saying, you know.
Did you hear about this girl over in Egypt? Yeah, she's a real empress.
Playing hangman. It's like, why does it keep saying empress? You
know? It's actually way less interesting than that. It's like she started calling herself the pious, which is a thing that the Roman emperor would do.
Okay.
Yeah, less fun.
Zenobia the Pious.
Yeah, exactly. But by 272, all of the hints are gone, and she's just straight up minting coins that refer to herself as Augusta and her son as Augustus. So really taking those titles and proclaiming herself the Empress of the Palmyrene Empire, which, of course, is a clean break from the Romans. They can't abide this. And so Emperor Aurelian at the time starts marshaling troops against her. And unfortunately, it's not a tough fight for the Romans. Most of the provinces fall pretty quickly because they haven't ever really switched their allegiance. Once he gets into Syria, which is the Palmyrene heartland, it's a little bit of a different story. They put up a pretty good fight. She spreads the rumor that they captured Aurelian. She even has her general find a man who resembles him and parades him through the streets.
The guy with like a fake glasses and a mustache.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, no, that's him. They wrap him in a sheet that looks like a toga, that sort of thing. So
they're like, say one Latin word. And he's like,
it's like, well, okay. It must be him. So that's two emperors now that have been humiliated. Just sad for the Romans. But then they almost win this big battle, but they get so caught up in the thrill of victory that they break their lines and the Romans are able to come around behind and attack their flanks. And, you know, it's pretty grim. Mm-hmm. So she escapes the city. They've got her surrounded. They've got her besieged in, I think, Palmyra itself. She escapes the city on a camel, which is going to... fly over the sands faster than any horse. And she's,
I'm sure that's how camels work.
Yeah, fine. Yep.
It is. They can really boogie. She's going to Persia because she's going to try to just like throw her lot in with the Persians, who she had previously been fighting against, because she at this point just really wants to retain her her power. Mm. She knows the Persians are the only ones who can kind of defeat the Romans. But Aurelian gets her before she can make it there. And thus endeth the Palmyrene Empire.
So they killed her?
Well, no. In yet another, I feel like any time I talk about a woman on this podcast, no one knows what happened to her in the end.
Right.
The most, the consensus is that Aurelian took her to Rome and then he publicly humiliated her a little bit.
Okay.
But then he gave her and her kids a pretty sweet villa by Hadrian's Villa. And she remarried either a nobleman or a Roman senator. There's a little disagreement there. And then her house became a tourist attraction.
Oh.
Like while she lived there.
Oh. Okay.
You know, like
a national trust.
Yeah, or you know, like the Hollywood stars tour, like the the open air bus. It's like, and here is the house of Zenobia.
That's marginally better than being skinned and then stuffed and put on display. Or
yeah, marginally.
Or any sort of like footstool transmogrification.
Yeah, so the other theory about what happened to her is that she was turned into a teapot. And she lived with her son who had turned into a teacup.
What? But she sang catchy tunes that echo through the ages.
R.I.P. Angela Lansbury.
Oh, yeah, true.
One final note on Zenobia is that her legacy remains incredibly strong to this day. I mean, she's seen as a freedom fighter, a fierce queen, a romantic heroine. People project whatever they want on her. But specifically in Syria, she's a national symbol. She has a kind of a cult following there, especially among Syrian nationalists. She's on banknotes, and she even had an extremely popular TV series made about her.
Like Xena. Is it Xena?
It's Zenobia, warrior princess.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So that is the kind of conclusion of the story that the three of us have told you, which started in great crisis for the Romans and then ends with them really
getting back in power.
Getting back what they lost.
That was surprisingly coherent.
I know.
I do have one question.
Yeah.
Will, what was the sixth conspiracy?
Well, there are a number of them that weren't mentioned. The sixth one, of course, is the Great Otter Conspiracy.
Otter.
Okay.
Conspiracy. Exactly. Otterman. Right.
Were they in league with the seagulls?
No, not at all. No. That's a separate conspiracy. So that's conspiracy five is seagulls, right? Okay. Conspiracy six, she's an otter. She was an otter.
She's
an otter. She's been an otter the whole time.
Oh, God, that makes so much sense.
She's been installed by the otters. Yeah. She dresses like a human. She acts like a human. Fundamentally, though, otter.
It explains all the dams.
Yeah. She could not stop building dams.
That's beavers, people.
Is it?
Beavers.
Oh, shit.
Are beavers and otters not the same thing?
No!
Conspiracy seven. Beavers and otters are the same thing.
Have you ever seen a beaver and otter in the same place at the same time? Exactly.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I hadn't considered that.
Got you there.
We just end it here.
Okay. I guess that's the year
261 plus.
Well, thank you for joining us. That's everything you'd ever want or need to know about the year 261. If you have questions, comments, you just want to chat,
or very specifically, if you can confirm that otters and beavers are different things.
Different things. They're not. I can't be dissuaded. please find us on Twitter. You can go to our website, randomlygeneratedhistory.com. It's got a link to all our socials and stuff. Also, please do like and subscribe. Leave a little rating and a comment on it. We do enjoy reading them. Email us in and tell your friends.
Indeed. And once you've told your friends, you can tell them what comes next, which is that we boot up the random number generator and it chooses our next year.
That's absolutely right. And the random number generator is booting up now.
It's paddling into existence.
That's what it gets off the trolley, then paddles to the chain around your neck. We're establishing the cannon.
It has land paddles. And it's paddling over. And the next year is... Oh, there's... There's something interesting going on with the random number generator. It appears to have generated a ticker tape.
Oh, well, oh, that's new.
Printing.
And upon...
Is it sick?
A ticker tape is being printed out, and upon the tape, it reads... It appears that a board member has asserted their right to hijack the random number generator.
Oh. Oh,
so this is a first for us. I don't think any of us were aware there was a ticker tape generation.
No, we didn't know there was paddles until today.
Yeah. All ad paddles on the random number generator. But it appears that Patrick...
Ah, the noble Patrick.
Oh.
First of his name.
Noble Patrick, first of his name, who is an esteemed board member,
yes,
has asserted his right to hijack the random number generator, and he's chosen the year 1969.
Nice.
Of course he has.
For the reason that it is, in his words, apparently when the US landed on the moon.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Allegedly, and no other reason, I'm sure.
So thank you, Patrick. We will cover that, I guess, next week. And thank you, Random Number Generator.
I guess if you want an opportunity to hijack the Random Number Generator, you can subscribe to our Patreon as a board member, and you will thus be gifted this right.
That's right.
Exactly.
Patreon.com/randomlyhistory.
As well as all the honours and awards that go befitting to you. And the lands. It's importantly the lands and the titles.
The lands and titles.
Yes, you will. I mean, we shouldn't overstate the lands and titles we're able to bestow. It is, I'm afraid, just Derbyshire and Norfolk.
Nothing of value. There is a small one-bedroom flat in Westminster.
Oh, yes, and of course the flat.
We try and use that as a timeshare thing for when people are visiting in London. You know,
it's Millbank, really.
There's a miniature golf course in Tulsa.
And of course the golf course. But apart from Derbyshire, Norfolk, the Millbank one bedroom flat, and the golf course in Tulsa, there are really no lands or titles.
Is it a full golf course? Is like a pitch and putt, like 8 hole, like,
no, it's a full 18. It's full 18. Yeah, full 18. 18. Yeah, full 18.
Have you not been?
I've not been. No, I'm not yet of the rank that the RNG bestows upon me an expense account. So I'm having to just get the bus everywhere.
Yeah, please do support us on Patreon, not least to pay for our very expensive trips to Tulsa to play golf on this course. Well, I guess we'll find out what happened in 1969 next week.
We sure will.
Thanks.
See you then.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.